Today on Jay Sekulow Live, the ACLJ has uncovered it. The Obama DOJ and FBI granted Hillary Clinton's attorneys immunity from the Espionage Act, among other laws. We'll talk about it today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. This is news we have waited to break for you. We wanted to get through the Mueller hearings and, of course, the Democrat debates that begin again tomorrow night on CNN. So we wanted to get this out today. I'll be on Sean Hannity's radio broadcast and television broadcast as well. This is information obtained from an ACLJ FOIA filed back in 2017. This related to the immunity agreements that were given out to Hillary Clinton's lawyers, who were also her top aides, when they sat down to do that interview with people like Peter Strzok. Remember on that, it was July, it was in 2016. It was on July 4th holiday weekend when Hillary Clinton did her not under oath interview with the FBI about the destruction of her emails. And her two lawyers, who were also aides implicated in this, were granted, they attended the meeting with Hillary Clinton and the FBI in the interview, but they were also granted immunity. And we've uncovered what kind of immunity they were actually given. And it is fairly broad, including both Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson. Now, they both were serving at that time as Hillary Clinton's private counsel. Cheryl Mills was formerly Hillary Clinton's chief of staff at the State Department. They were given immunity from prosecution for anything found on their laptops violating multiple felony criminal statutes governing the mishandling of classified information and or the removal or destruction of records, including Espionage Act provisions. We will walk through all of this with you today. We're taking your phone calls on at 1-800-684-3110. I use it, too, as an example. This happens in 2016. We file our FOIA after more, and there were a lot of FOIAs being filed by the ACLJ on the Clinton matter, but this specific FOIA on these immunity agreements, we filed going back in 2017, in September. And we have been fighting until just a couple weeks ago still. We had to ultimately go to court, and so FBI didn't want to comply, went to court, figured out that there were these immunity agreements because we got a letter that referenced those immunity agreements. So then we had to negotiate getting the agreements themselves. What kind of immunity was granted here? And it went so far as to say that after we searched your laptops, and these would be the laptops that had the 62,000 emails on them potentially, that the FBI would destroy them, but they would not be subject to FOIA because they weren't actually in control of the Department of Justice and FBI. So they also went so far to protect Hillary Clinton and her staff, they grant them immunity from all prosecution, so any kind of criminal prosecution. But also the laptops themselves, they say, while you're giving us the laptops, we don't have custody, thus it won't be subject to a Freedom of Information Act request like from a group like the ACLJ on what's on those laptops. And we can tell you that as of today, it is unclear, because of the Inspector General's report, whether or not those laptops have actually been destroyed or not. But what we do know, again, is what the Comey and Strzok and Loretta Lynch DOJ was doing at the time to protect Hillary Clinton from this investigation and to protect her team leading up to this investigation. We're taking your phone calls on this, 1-800-684-3110. Our first FOIA on Clinton and Lynch was filed in July of 2016. And then this specific FOIA filed in 2017, and we're getting the info to you in 2019. And this all just came together in the last couple weeks. It just is an example, one, of uncovering the corruption in Washington, D.C. and Jim Comey's FBI with these actors like Peter Strzok, who also then went after the president. But it's also, just to remind you, in the matching challenge month of July, the work that the ACLJ is doing, and that when you say you want to get this information and we want to make it public, the years it takes to battle in court to get it to you. So this is a great time to support the work of the ACLJ as we come to the end of our matching challenge month of July. Double the impact of your donation. Donate today at ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Let me take you back in time. Remember when Hillary Clinton, this is leading up to the election, and the FBI is investigating the destruction of her emails, the bleach bidding, the Clinton server. That's what we're talking about here. What was on the laptops. So Hillary Clinton agreed to do an interview with the FBI, not under oath. And it was July 4th weekend, 2016. And she wanted to bring in her lawyers. And her lawyers happened to be people who were also her top aides before becoming her personal lawyers, like her chief of staff at the State Department, Cheryl Mills, Heather Samuelson as well. So before they even sat down, they wanted immunity agreements. They wanted immunity agreements from the Department of Justice. So in June, they received those before Hillary Clinton sat down in July. There's three areas that the two main areas that the agreements cover when it comes to immunity. And so and they both got the same immunity agreements, both Heather Mills and Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson. First, they were granted immunity from prosecution under multiple felony statutes for anything found under their laptops, including immunity from prosecution under the Espionage Act, like willfully communicating, delivering, transmitting, or causing to be communicated, deliver, or transmitted, or attempt to communicate, deliver, transmit, or cause to be communicated to any person not entitled to receive it, or willfully retain the same and fail to deliver it to the officer or employee of the U.S. entitled to receive it, or through gross negligence permit the same to be removed from its proper place of custody or delivered to anyone in violation of his trust or to be lost, stolen, abstracted, or destroyed. That is from the Espionage Act, and it's specific national defense information, information relating to the national defense, information that could be used to the injury of the U.S. or to the advantage of foreign nations. And they get immunity from that completely. From having the possession of it, control over it, giving it over to other people, not keeping it the right way, not removing it the right way, not storing it the right way. They also got, and just to summarize that for you, these Espionage Act sections make it a felony for a person with unauthorized access or possession to convey the information to an unauthorized person or for a person who has the authority to negligently allow it to be removed from its proper place or destroyed. Delivered to anyone in violation of his trust, like a private email server, and then of course failing to properly report it. So you've got also in here the removal of classified information by public officers and employees. They got immunity from that. This makes it a felony for a government officer to knowingly and without authority remove classified info with the intent to retain the info at an unauthorized location. The Clinton email server. Then there were the records and reports. This is a criminal statute they got immunity from that makes it a felony for a person to willfully and unlawfully conceal, remove, or destroy a government record or document. So, again, the destruction, the bleach bidding. It walked through all of this. And then the DOJ went so far as to say, but while we will review your two laptops, we will not be taking custody over those laptops, and thus they won't be subject to Freedom of Information Act requests. So don't worry, groups like the ACLJ won't be able to FOIA that info because technically we will say that it is not within our custody. That, Than, to me, is what is almost the most shocking, is the extent, not just to cover the individuals, Hillary Clinton's staff and her attorneys at the time, and then let them sit there during the interview. I mean, there's so many questions about that. But then the government taking the steps so far to conceal this from the American people, what was found on those laptops, by saying, even though you're giving us access to the laptops and actually physically giving over the laptops, which still may not be destroyed. So, I mean, still in the custody, but we're not going to define that as actually being in custody of DOJ so that we're circumventing the FOIA law.
Jordan, I don't think this is anything short of a massive cover-up. I really don't, because any of these pieces of hardware that were in the custody or control of the department would have been available to be FOIA'd by groups like the ACLJ, and they were probably right to forecast into the future that we would ask for them, because we did indeed do it. But Jordan, they tried to get around that with a technicality and by being cute with their words. But in the agreement, Jordan, and I just want to stress this again, you said it, but I really want our listeners to hear this. They agreed to destroy these laptops once they were done with them. Now, we do not know whether or not that has happened or not. We don't know if there was a determination made that they were done with the laptops, but they agreed to destroy them, Jordan. Just definitionally, if you are agreeing to destroy a piece of hardware, you have to have custody over it. You have to have control over it. If you don't have custody and you don't have control, then there would be no ability to destroy it. So they had to have it both ways. And look, the law is very simple on this, Jordan. They can choose one of two paths. But if they don't take custody, we can't issue a FOIA for it. But if they take custody of it, they have to provide us access to it. Jordan, really took us almost 2 years, really more than 2 years, if you go back to that 2016 date for us to get it. But we've got it now, and I encourage the American people to read all the details.
Here's the info that we got that we're talking about here. This is the DOJ document for Cheryl Mills. The same document for Heather Samuelson starts off with the explanation. Both have the DOJ on there, but the explanation of what the immunity they got actually was that they agreed to in June before Hillary Clinton sat down in that interview, that they were allowed to attend as her personal attorneys, even though they were having to get criminal immunity themselves. And of course, immunity, these immunities were specific to their laptops and the records that were on those laptops, correct?
Yes, exactly. And remember, just to state the number, 62,320 emails were on these laptops. These are what were called the culling laptops, Jordan. So there were emails on a wide variety of laptops which had been searched, and the FBI and the DOJ were trying to determine whether they'd had access to all of them. These were the two laptops that all of them were culled together on, and then that Heather Samuelson and Cheryl Mills went through and deleted them, and then ultimately, Jordan, BleachBit was used on it. And we can get to this a little bit later in the broadcast, but for my money, there are some very troubling ties about the number of the people that were involved in this. Let's just say this, the same cast of characters over and over again. Yeah. And I'll just give you one little teaser. The National Security Division, you know who worked there? Peter Strzok.
Yeah, and Peter Strzok was the lead FBI investigator on the Clinton email investigation. That before he launched Crossfire Hurricane, or even simultaneously, I think, while he was launching Crossfire Hurricane, he was also finishing up, as we know, because Jim Comey ultimately announced that this was over and made that prosecutorial decision with Hillary Clinton. Then he reopened it once. When was that exactly? That was in, like, was that August leading up to the election that Jim Comey pulled? That was sometime around then. I remember it was hot outside, and it was months before the election. So right around, you know, it was about a month after Hillary Clinton did this interview, Jim Comey announces we're done. Peter Strzok, at the same time, was handling this, was also just beginning to open the investigation Crossfire Hurricane into the Trump campaign. So closing out the Clinton campaign and targeting the Trump campaign. I mean, this is what I think you have to understand here. When you have material like this, even if you inadvertently disseminate it or destroy it, you're violating the Espionage Act. If you are putting it on a server that could be accessed by individuals, even if you don't intend to have those individuals be able to access, even if you believe that it's secure, Than, you're still in violation of the Espionage Act. And these are serious charges. People go to jail for a number of years. These are felonies. So this, your every sentence is for at least more than a year in prison. And they start adding up if you see all the things that they got immunity from.
Jordan, it's an affirmative obligation. When you take the oath of office at this high of a level and you're going to be afforded secrets of the United States, classified information, you have an affirmative obligation to protect those. So we've heard from a number of players in this case that there was nothing deliberate, that maybe there was a misclassification or an inadvertent dissemination. Jordan, that is not a defense. When you take that oath and you access this information, you have to take due diligence to make sure that it is protected. That certainly did not happen in this area. But Jordan, if you look at these immunity agreements, I would argue it went way beyond that. The destruction of this evidence was deliberate. Now, it happened at the hands of the government, and maybe Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson are saying, well, that the government did that. But, Jordan, they had an obligation to protect that information. And quite frankly, it is shameful that members of the government would cover it up for them. But that's how I read this.
Yeah, and this is, again, these attorneys for Clinton who were her aides before, like chief of staff, so they had access to it as government officials. Then access to it as private, and they went through his things and started deleting things from these main server computers that also were like the computers used that backed up the hard drive that Clinton's the private email server that Clinton had, and they went in and they said, you know, we're not gonna cooperate unless we get immunities, and this is what their lawyers negotiated out for them. Very broad immunity from any kind of criminal prosecution. Then you don't look to that, especially as the attorneys for Hillary Clinton, unless you feel like that's potentially coming at your way. I mean, that's another thing here is it doesn't mean you're going to get proven guilty yet, but it certainly means that you feel like you could be charged with it.
It had a value to them, Jordan, to be offered this immunity. It was an immunity that they wanted, and that less than 3 weeks later, they went into the room when Hillary Clinton was interviewed. So, Jordan, I think this is the important thing. These are two individuals who knew virtually everything that had happened because they had been participants in it, and they saw a value in getting immunity from the Espionage Act. I think that alone tells you a lot.
Folks, we have a matching challenge right now at ACLJ.org. This is years of work. You don't usually get immunity agreements, by the way. They go to great lengths, the government, not to provide this kind of information out to the public and in this kind of detail. And we're able to get it to you exactly why these lawyers were there with Hillary Clinton. Support the work of the ACLJ. Matching challenge month of July. Double your impact, your donation. ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
So we were talking, I know it's shocking, but this is what it, when you take on the federal government and the bureaucracy and the bureaucrats who work in these offices, and you go out after information like immunity agreements between Hillary Clinton's lawyers and the FBI and DOJ, who, by the way, her lawyers were also people who were actively engaged in the act being investigated. That's what was so bizarre here. So they needed immunity to even sit down with the FBI from criminal prosecution for things like espionage, destruction of classified records, storage of records. And these were the lawyers who formerly were, one was the chief of staff to Hillary Clinton at the State Department, so the chief of staff for the Secretary of State. The other was the senior advisor to the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and the White House liaison for the State Department and the Secretary's office. Then they become her personal attorneys. They take over the computers, which are like the backup to the Hillary Clinton's private server. They go through that those computers and start making deletions, which is why they needed immunity from destruction of documents, including and the Espionage Act and things like that, because, again, these are private computers and the government records, which, again, they were mishandling, they were destroying, and they were also, by putting them on like regular Wi-Fi and putting them outside of the government process of protected documents, they were making them potentially open to access by foreign governments. And so there was an espionage component there, which you don't have to have the intent to commit espionage under that act, as so far as what you're doing is so negligent. And remember, it was Jim Comey who would not use the words negligent to describe the actions by the Clinton team specifically, because that would have invoked the criminal idea. So what did he say? He said it wasn't grossly negligent. It was carelessness. Did he even say the word gross? Yeah, extremely careless. And that, again, is gross negligence, but he didn't want to invoke the legal term of art. So we've got the immunity agreements now, because it's very bizarre to have your former chief of staff at the State Department, your former senior advisor, then become your private attorneys, then get immunity after they start deleting your emails. Then they get to sit down with the FBI with you on that July 4th weekend interview, knowing that they've got immunity from everything they're about to hand over to the DOJ and FBI. And by the way, don't worry, we won't let anybody get access to this through FOIA, because we'll determine that though you're giving us the computers, you're not giving us the custody we don't have the custody or control, and we're going to limit our searches specifically to things. So we won't be subject to FOIA, which is not how the FOIA laws work, but it's how they interpret it. So, the wide sweeping nature of this, and it involves all of the same individuals that were, while they were wrapping this up, preparing to go after Donald Trump and Crossfire Hurricane.
Yeah, it's certainly alarming that the National Security Division was so anxious to pass out these immunities. Of course, that invokes the question, was it Peter Strzok signing these letters? I suspect it probably was. But Jordan, we do know a couple of things. We can't put all of these pieces together yet, but we know that BleachBit was used on these laptops. We don't know necessarily who did it or who all was involved, but we do know previously, Jordan, from the Inspector General, that Justin Cooper was one of the individuals that the Clinton team hired to destroy mobile devices. You know, there was the infamous story of them being smashed with hammers, and Justin Cooper testified that he was aware of that happening. He was on the team that was hired to do that. Jordan, Justin Cooper was represented legally by none other than Aaron Zebley. People who are watching this show are going to know that name, because yep. He has notably been a longtime aide to Special Counsel Mueller, sat beside him during last week's hearing. Jordan, all of that to say, we don't know exactly who participated where, but in each of these instances, you just see the same names coming up over and over and over again, and it sure looks like a systematic effort by a circle of corruption inside these agencies to apply a double standard of the law. And I tell you what, these two immunity agreements, Jordan, they are huge pieces to the puzzle. We're not all the way there yet, but I encourage people to stick with us, because the pieces are starting to come together and they involve the same people over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I want to make that clear to people. This was the attorney, this was the deputy special counsel, was his actual title. And he was the one sitting next to Bob Mueller during those hearings last week. So, Than, again, his involvement here, he was representing these individuals too.
So in a private capacity back in, I believe it was 2016, he represented Justin Cooper, which you can go back and read the Inspector General report. Justin Cooper testified to the Inspector General that he was aware of the destruction of mobile devices from Hillary Clinton, the smashing of them with a hammer. We don't know, Jordan, whether or not he personally did the destroying, but he was on the team that was hired to erase data and destroy mobile devices. So you have to ask the question, how much did he know? Did he know about this bleach bidding? And certainly, I think you have to ask the question, did Aaron Zebley know that at the same time he was serving? After that fact, he went to serve Special Counsel Mueller on his team. Was he aware of that? And did the Special Counsel know about it? Jordan, I think those are all fair questions to ask.
And of course, Jeannie Rae was handling other matters, and she was for Hillary Clinton and then joined the special counsel's team. Andrew Weissman on the special counsel's team was at her election night party. Peter Schrock was leading this investigation before he opened the initial investigation into Donald Trump and the Russian collusion, which he then joined the special counsel's team. So, I mean, there's so much crossover here. We're going to get to the phone calls now, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Mary Ellen calling from Illinois on line 3. Mary Ellen, welcome to Jay Secchio Live. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Jordan. I have a question. Hillary, that's for that interview, I think, in around 4th of July in 2016.
Yeah, before the election.
When did she commission or whatever pay for the opposition research from the Fusion GPS?
So what we know is that that dossier was already making the rounds by then. Than, I mean, that's clear because in July, they begin Crossfire Hurricane. So right around while they're wrapping up Hillary Clinton's matter, and this was how they kind of put a bow on it, and for Jim Comey is by getting an interview from her that was under oath, granting this broad immunity to her attorneys slash staffers who were deleting the emails, is then they at the same time they were preparing to go after the Trump team. So I don't think they had probably filed, and again, the FISA application yet, but they were certainly preparing it. This was when they were getting everything ready.
Yeah, the dossier was in the works, Jordan. And again, I mean, people need to remember there were multiple applications filed with the FISA office, and we don't know which ones included the dossier as evidence, at least conclusively at this point. But Jordan, we do know that they had to go back repeatedly to get the application approved. So I think it's a very good question that the caller asked. The dossier was certainly making the rounds. The question will be who knew what and when did it be? When was it inserted into the applications? And Jordan, maybe most specifically, how many of the people that were signing those applications for the FISA warrant on Carter Page knew that it included information that they couldn't corroborate or verify? I think that number, Jordan, is depressingly, I think that number is going to be pretty high. It's going to be more than one or two. There were several officials inside these bureaus that knew they were dealing with bad information.
You know what's interesting here as we go into this next break, and we've got second half hour coming up. We'll take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Re-explain it to, go back through what these lawyers for Hillary Clinton, which was her chief of staff at the State Department, her senior advisor at the State Department as Secretary of State. These weren't just normal lawyers for her because they were actively involved in the cover-up, so they got immunities from that. It combined total, if they were convicted of everything they were given immunity from, I'm not saying they would have been, but if they were, 28 years each in prison. That's how much prison time they could have done if they were convicted of what they were given immunity from. That's how serious these charges were. We'll be back, second half hour coming up. Remember, this is all the work of the ACLJ to uncover this. All because of your support that we're able to fight these cases, not just file the documents, not just talk about them on radio, but go to court to get them over years. Donate to the ACLJ today, our matching challenge, aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, let me reset the stage for you. Back in 2016, right before the election, summer before the election, Hillary Clinton agrees to sit down with the FBI, been investigating the use of her private email server and the destruction of emails on that server, including government emails from her time as Secretary of State. So her attorneys, before sitting down on July 4th weekend in 2016, want immunity themselves. Now, that's because they weren't just attorneys brought in to handle the matter. They were actively involved in the matter. In fact, they were part of the team deleting the emails. Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson. Cheryl Mills was Hillary Clinton's chief of staff at the State Department. That is a high-ranking government position for a Secretary of State. And then Heather Samuelson was the senior advisor and White House liaison at the State Department, senior position. So they negotiate in June of 2016 immunity from prosecution from the Espionage Act, from records, Federal Records Act, two different Federal Records Acts that come together and combine would be a total of 28 years in prison if you were convicted of all these violations for each of them. So I mean, if you were only convicted of a little bit of them, serious prison time. These are major felonies. So they become her attorneys, even though they were actively involved in the situation. So that's part one. Part two of the agreement with the government was that you could see these two main computers. They call them culling laptops. They included all 62,000 emails pulled from the Clinton servers were stored on these laptops at some time, but some were deleted by Mills and Samuelson. And though they agreed to hand them over to the DOJ and then the FBI to investigate them, the FBI limited how they would look into them and shield the laptops from FOIA by saying they never actually got custody of the laptops. We uncovered all this information over a three-year process. So it began with FOIAs about Hillary Clinton and Loretta Lynch dating back to 2016. Then the specific FOIAs on the immunity agreements in 2017 that we filed. And just up until just the last couple weeks, getting the final information on exactly what was in these immunity agreements for the top Clinton aides who were her attorneys, who were there when she gave, did her interview with the FBI. Peter Strzok was leading this for the FBI. Jim Comey also involved. In fact, wasn't Jim Comey there? I mean, I want to check that. Did Jim Comey attend that, or Peter Strzok would have certainly attended it? Let's go back and see if Jim Comey also attended that interview. But the DOJ decides to give this kind of immunity over to the attorneys. I want to go to Harry Hutchinson, who has been a law professor as well. I mean, it's a unique situation to say the least when your main attorneys were involved in the what was being investigated.
Absolutely.
And so they need criminal immunity agreements to even move forward with as Hillary Clinton's attorneys.
Absolutely. So one of the key issues here is that Heather Samuelson and Cheryl Mills should have been the targets of the FBI investigation. They had an active role in covering up, in concealing, in destroying documents. Nonetheless, the FBI, as part of its faux sham investigation, gave them immunity as they assisted Hillary Clinton in evading prosecution. It's clear beyond question that Hillary Clinton's email server held over 33,000 emails, many of which were classified, and many of them were classified to the highest degree possible. Nonetheless, Heather Samuelson and Cheryl Mills were given immunity. It makes no sense, and it violates all sorts of criminal procedure under the law.
Literally, the first working day after this interview, Jim Comey made the announcement that the investigation was done into Hillary Clinton servers. And that though it was, again, he didn't use grossly negligent, extreme carelessness, that there would be no criminal prosecutions. Loretta Lynch confirmed that the next day. So, I mean, we're talking after they got all this settled in June, they were able to end this by the first week of July. And again, Jim Comey kind of made a mess of that later on. But initially, this was over for them by July 5th when he made that announcement. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110 on this information we have uncovered, the ACLJ has uncovered on the immunity agreements from the DOJ with Hillary Clinton's lawyers, Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, to, quote, dispose of evidence and evade federal law. So they get immunity agreements, but they also get, which is, I think, what's unique here, is an agreement that you will hand over these computers. You know, your computers to us, and but we will, when you hand those computers over, we're not going to actually take custody of the computers, so we won't have to, those computers will not be subject to the Freedom of Information Act request filed by groups like FOIA. So this is from the letter from the DOJ to Cheryl Mills, for instance, and Heather Samuelson received the same letter. Involuntarily providing the device, Cheryl Mills does not relinquish ownership or control over the device except for the FBI's limited investigative use as specified by this agreement. The FBI does not assert custody and control over the device or its contents for any other purpose, including any requests made pursuant, I mean, it says specifically, to the Freedom of Information Act request. The terms custody and control is a FOIA term of art. So in other words, the DOJ and FBI purported or attempted to agree itself out of the requirements of FOIA. And even though these are specifically, an FBI lawyer, Lisa Page, you all know about her, told the DOJ Inspector General that these were State Department's records. I mean, so these were not records that the DOJ or FBI could even determine would not be subject to FOIA. So it went further than just saying you're not going to criminally prosecute these two individuals. It went to the next step, which is we're never going to release the information, and because it's not really in our control. And then we'll ultimately dispose of the laptops. So literally, you're going to hand them over to us. We're going to destroy them, but we never had custody over them. I mean, that again, I'll go to Harry on this. It is playing games with the American people and our legal system to say that you could actually give over the computers. The DOJ will then be responsible for ultimately, they're not giving them back. So, but that's not custody and control.
I think you're precisely correct. So the FBI agreed to destroy the computers. Therefore, that means that the FBI cannot plausibly claim that they did not have custody and control for purposes of FOIA. So in essence, the FBI wanted to have it both ways. You could argue, it strikes me, that there was indeed a deliberate and intentional conspiracy that involves the FBI, the DOJ, Heather Samuelson, Cheryl Mills, and possibly Hillary Clinton, that led to the destruction of classified information. In other words, they wanted to get rid of all evidence that there was indeed a violation that might implicate Samuelson, Cheryl Mills, and Hillary Clinton. Also, by destroying this laptop, it would make it more difficult to prove something that most Americans now know, that the FBI had entered into a sham investigation from the get-go. So those are many of the problems surrounding this particular agreement.
Yes. I mean, the Crossfire Hurricane was beginning the same time that these agreements were being done. In fact, Fusion GPS hired Christopher Steele in June of 2016. Then so that's when the dossier was being put together. Ultimately, the first FISA application, we believe, on Carter Page was filed October of 2016, so before the election. Crossfire Hurricane specifically began July 31st, 2016. So, I mean, literally, they finished up with Hillary Clinton West and went and gave all full immunity, not just to her staff. I mean, listen, they were facing up to 28 years in prison each and fines as well, felonies, like the Espionage Act. This would have totally crushed Hillary Clinton's campaign, even more so than just the idea that this was happening. But then second, the document, which is most important, I think, more important than what criminal charges these individuals could have faced, was that the FBI telling them, we'll never let the public find out what we see in these documents because we will say that we didn't have custody over them. That it is really just absurd that the DOJ and FBI, even under Loretta Lynch and Jim Comey, would agree to this.
Yeah, and Harry's exactly right. This is really a conspiracy on the part of DOJ, FBI, and the Clinton staffers to subvert several federal statutes. It flies in the face of equal justice under the law. I think of how many service members that I've known about who inadvertently mishandled classified information, and some of them not only had their careers ended, they ended up being convicted and given prison time for this. The idea that they would agree not to prosecute the principals involved in an investigation ahead of time and then to try and cover it up by not having official custody of the devices. Remember, Jordan, a couple of years ago when all this began to leak out, that devices were being destroyed, there was bleach bit, and then cell phones were smashed with hammers. Initially, people, including us, could not understand how the Clinton staff could do this and not be prosecuted. But now we know why, because the DOJ and the FBI ahead of time granted them immunity for these and any other illegal acts. And Jordan, no one gets this kind of a sweet deal when the Espionage Act violations are in play. But that is exactly what happened. And Harry's also right. This proves that the investigation wasn't an investigation at all. The DOJ and the FBI essentially did a sham investigation. And I think partly because the leadership in those two agencies, they fully expected and wanted Hillary Clinton to be president.
Let's go to Tina's call, line 2 in Texas. Tina, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Couple of questions. First question is, who actually signed off on these immunity agreements?
So a number of people would have had to okay this. I think as far maybe as the attorney general, but certainly deputy attorney generals. I mean, high up to get this kind of immunity. But it's interesting, in the immunity agreement, which we have the document, I'm holding it in my hand for Facebook and Periscope, look what is redacted. The two DOJ officials that actually signed off on it, Tina, they redacted that information. Now, it has what division they're from. It was the Counterintelligence and Export Control Section, National Security Division of US DOJ. So it's two people from there. So it wouldn't have been Peter Strzok. He wouldn't have had the power, by the way, to give immunity. That comes from the prosecutors. Or potential prosecutors, so DOJ. So it came from DOJ attorneys. Now, what's interesting is, wasn't one of those DOJ attorneys in this division also linked to Jim Comey in the spy FOIA that we just uncovered, Than, that was in the National Security Division of the Department of Justice related to FISAs and things like that?
Yeah, National Security Division was certainly implicated. I don't recall the name off the top of my head, Jordan, but two things I would add to that discussion. I bet Peter Strzok was aware of this because he was the lead investigator on the case. Certainly, he couldn't sign this. But I would just ask rhetorically, well, not even rhetorically, I really mean this question. Why can't we know these names, Jordan? Why can't we know who authorized these immunity agreements? Because if there was cause for them, if there was a reason, if this was information that this kind of immunity agreement made sense, then we should be able to access that information. And Jordan, I'll just say this. You've talked a lot about how they wanted to get around the custody and control requirement because they thought we would ultimately get it. I think this violates that same principle. We need to know which government officials were engaging in this specific way to shield the people who had done wrong, who were guilty of wrongdoing, or at least certainly looks like they were guilty of wrongdoing. We need to be able to know who made those decisions so that as public servants, they can be held to account. I would just ask again, why can't we know these two names?
Yeah, I mean, it is again. So there's the answer, Tina, is though you can determine that this would have gone high up the chain in Department of Justice, that the two individuals who ultimately signed off on it are redacted. And it doesn't make any sense, like Than said, because you're already giving out all of the information. Whether those individuals are there or not, whether they were political appointees or bureaucrats, probably because they're still there. That's what I'm guessing, is they're probably still Department of Justice attorneys. But there was someone we uncovered last week who was a DOJ go-between for Anthony Ferranti, Tashina Gower, who was a top national security advisor at the Department of Justice, who would have been in the National Security Division. I'm not saying it's her name on there because I think that these are huge divisions, but these would have been senior people involved in making these decisions. 1-800-684-3110. We come back. We're going to start taking all your phone calls and questions about this. Remember, I'm going to be on Sean Hannity's radio broadcast and television show to discuss this, but we won't have time on there to uncover just as to go through this as we have extensively today on the broadcast, using what will ultimately be the full hour of the show. So I want to take your questions and comments now on that. And so you can share this. We've got it up at aclj.org as well with your friends and family. This new information you can share on your social media account. So give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. And I just want to make it clear, you know, this is 3+ years of work at the American Center for Law and Justice. It's just a small part of the work that we do. But we're able to do it. We're able to get this information, not from news accounts. We uncover it because of your financial support. We have attorneys who can fight this out with the FBI and the DOJ for years, going back to 2016, so just 2 weeks ago when we compiled all this information. So continue to support the work of the ACLJ. We're coming to the end of the month, the ending of the matching challenge month of July. So you will double the impact of your donation. We have donors ready to match every donation we receive by midnight, the last day of the month. So make your financial contribution today at aclj.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. So you know what we've uncovered here is these immunity agreements between Hillary Clinton's lawyers, who were also formerly her chief of staff and senior advisor at the State Department, when she was Secretary of State, then privately became her lawyers and started deleting emails from the main laptops that they had, which were the backup to the email server, which was destroyed and bleach-bitted. And so it's the immunity agreements for them, and it's the agreement to keep whatever the FBI finds when these laptops are given over free from any kind of uncovering by U.S. legal organizations like the ACLJ, because they say, well, even though you're giving it to us, and even though we're going to destroy them ultimately, we don't have custody over it, and which is a legal term of art here specifically. And so they will not be, the DOJ spells this out. They will not be, whatever information we find will not be subject to a Freedom of Information Act request. This is, again, it is unusual to say the least. And just so you know, the kind of immunity they got individually, if they were prosecuted for these crimes, which they had a real fear of because they were requesting immunity like this, they could have each served a total of 28 years in federal prison. I mean, serious violations of federal law if they were prosecuted to the max extent. Let's say they only half. I mean, it's 14 years. Say a third, seven. This is, again, a quarter of that is 7 years in prison. Serious prison time. Now we take your phone calls. Laura in Nevada on line one. Thanks for holding on, Laura. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I want to thank the ACLJ for everything that they do. And if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have this information, and I appreciate it. First question I have is, what's going to happen next? I mean, with the Comey situation, with the Obama administration, with the Clintons, and all of this this big mess, if any law-abiding citizen like myself would have done something like this, I would have already been in jail. So I would like to know what's going to happen next to these people that are unlawfully and forcing them to take responsibility for their actions.
So I think what you look at, and we do believe that Lisa Page testified that it would have been Richard Scott and David Loftman from the DOJ who signed off on these. And that would have been based on her testimony, nothing more than that. And I don't know if she was saying, I believe in that testimony. That would have been likely that they were the ones signing off on it. But so we do have some names to put there potentially, but that's based off her testimony and what she believed would be the case. I think the individuals here specifically, it's not really Heather Samuelson and Cheryl Mills, Harry. It is the officials who were at the DOJ and FBI. It is specifically the Peter Strzoks, the McCabes, the Comeys, the individuals we're just uncovering now at the DOJ. We now know there's not only Inspector General looking into this, but there's a U.S. attorney looking into it as well.
So I think the caller raises a very good question, and I think your analysis is spot on. I think Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson have reached an immunity deal with the government. So I think the focus ought to...
Can you pull those? That's not easy to do.
I think that would require a court order and some type of adjudication, which I don't think is very unlikely. I do think the individuals who signed this deal, who participated in negotiating this deal, arguably should face some accountability, and to the extent that we can adduce sufficient evidence suggesting that there indeed was a conspiracy to violate the law, to pervert the course of justice, those individuals ought to face prosecution.
Yeah.
And so we should go after those individuals and send a signal to the DOJ and to the FBI. To the extent that you participate in this malfeasance, you will face criminal punishment, prosecution, and investigation.
And what was important there, Wes, you as handling like classified information. Listen, Department of Justice can decide to give out these immunities if they believe the testimony is more important than the potential criminal prosecution. These are extreme, And it's also bizarre that these are the attorneys. These weren't just mad people being investigated. They also sat as Hillary Clinton's representing Hillary Clinton in this matter. So they got this before they moved forward. They also had the, but they had the two laptops, one each, that were called the calling laptops that were the backup to the Clinton server, the famous Clinton server. And what I think that Harry spoke to there was that it was the DOJ attorneys who actively made sure that these would not be subject to FOIA. And that's what they attempted to do anyways.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is, again, it certainly appears to be a violation of their rules at the Department of Justice. And thus those kind of people should at a minimum probably not have their jobs anymore.
Exactly. And I'd have to look into it, but I think there are federal statutes that deal with corruption and conspiracy and these kinds of things, which could, you know, be brought into play here. But as the layers get peeled back on this, it is more and more ugly. And what we found out, along with the IG report coming out hopefully in September, and then the investigation that John Durham, the U.S. attorney, is doing, it does not bode well for senior officials in the Obama administration, nor should it, because there is not supposed to be a two-tiered system of justice in America.
No. Here we go back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to get this information up for you, too, at ACLJ. .org. Let's go to Beth in North Carolina on line four. Beth, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thanks so much. As I've been listening to y'all, one of the things that just struck me is it just doesn't seem like there was really any legitimate legal consideration for these immunity agreements. It sounds like there was this immunity from the Espionage Act in exchange for nothing. And if that's the case, why isn't there some legal basis to set aside the immunity agreement so that we can then go after the individuals who participated in the document destruction? I think people in this country are just outraged by the fact that people can get away with this, particularly attorneys participating in all this and destroy documents, which is a felony act.
Yeah, I mean, and they were bizarrely, the reason they wanted this immunity was so they could be part of, they were representing Hillary Clinton then. They were also part of the investigation. So they got full immunity, even though they also deleted from deleting emails, from keeping them on their private laptops. I mean, all of these would be violations of the law, Than. And I get the frustration. I think where the real frustration lies, though, is the government. At the time, these individuals were no longer working for the government. It was the government attorneys at the DOJ and Loretta Lynch's Department of Justice and Jim Comey's FBI working on these immunity deals. And they are the ones who should be held accountable for this ultimately miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, you had senior government officials, Jordan, playing both sides of this. And I would just summarize it with this. I mean, you had the National Security Division signing off on these immunity agreements, while at the same time, a senior official inside the division, Bruce Orr, was serving as the backdoor conduit for Christopher Steele, infusing GPS with the dossier. So, Jordan, there was an abdication of duty by senior level officials. And I certainly agree with the caller. They need to be held to account. Immunity agreements have to hold up. They have to be worth something, Jordan, in order for our process to work the way it should. However, all of those who were involved in this, they need to be exposed to the extent that they can be prosecuted. That needs to happen. And ultimately, all of them have to be rooted out. In order to do any of that, Jordan, we have to know the whole picture. That's what we're pursuing.
And folks, that is what we continue to do. And we come to these moments where we want to release the information we've gathered to you. We've got kind of gathered this over 3 years, including up into the last 2 weeks, still working with the FBI and DOJ to get this information through our FOIA request. We're able to do that because of your financial support to the ACLJ. It's a matching challenge month of July. It's almost coming to a close. Whatever you donate is matched by a group of ACLJ donors. Donate now, ACLJ.org. It's so we can do the work that we can do. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do.